Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, returning with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. With Dave Anderson making waves back in the dugout. Well, I say waves, I mean, he's had one game, he's unbeaten, though. I'm going to make no comments about Barnett's season so far, but if they need to get a bronze statue made of Dave Anderson, I think they better start ordering the bronze up now. But anyway, I thought it'd give me the opportunity to have I got news for you with running some guest co-hosts alongside me here on the show. As I'm pleased to say, the first in the hot seat, it's no stranger to the show, and it's a welcome to senior writer at the Non-League paper, David Richardson. Welcome back, David. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much, Tim. Pleasure to be here. Hope I have got some news for you.
Well, we'd normally do that newsy bit at the back end of the show, but it's been another one of those odd weeks in non-league. At the moment, we've got a few games in the National League. We'll get to the restructuring shortly, because that's been the big news of the week, I guess, with our guests coming up. But elsewhere, the FA Vars, I suppose, has dominated. The third round completed last weekend, fifth round drawn at the start of the week, and a busy fourth round weekend for you guys to cover this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. The game's coming thick and fast now. Obviously, finished those third round ties last weekend, like you say, the ones that were sort of hanging over from almost the end of last year, really, that couldn't be played. So now we're sort of really back into the thick of things, into the fourth round. Lots of ties this weekend that we'll have covered in the paper as usual. So nice to have a bit different football, really, and sort of really competitive and exciting cup football.
Yeah, and there were a couple of shocks in last week's FA Vars, but it is nice to see some different names that you wouldn't normally sort of be talking about week in, week out, and hopefully that they can grab some headlines and people across non-league can understand the depth of talent and the depth of football across non-league.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually, Tim. You do almost discover new teams, if that's the right word to say, as sort of the Vars goes on, and you learn about teams that perhaps you wouldn't necessarily know of. And then, it's always interesting, really, these clubs in the Vars who go far, they're always then the ones that are pushing on up the pyramid into step four and even step three as well. So yeah, good to have a look at those clubs and hear some of their stories and meet some new people as well.
Yeah, and I said it's an odd week. Every week's an odd week in non-league at the moment. We obviously got the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh this weekend, so a clash with the normal 3 o'clock kickoff time. So we've got kickoffs early. I think there's some in the morning, certainly some lunchtime kickoffs, and some later on in the day this weekend as well.
Yeah, quite a mixture, and a couple on Friday night as well. Friday night football, so a very busy weekend, really, I suppose, all across Friday and Saturday as well. So yeah, lots of excitement to look forward to, and then obviously the straight into the fifth round next weekend too. So really rattling off the ties and getting closer towards Wembley now.
Yeah, and talking about Wembley, I suppose we've just had the information come through this afternoon, recording this on Thursday, of the kickoff times for the first non-league finals day, which is, I guess, non-league finals day 2020 being played in 2021, which is going to be May the 3rd. And we've got some the two games taking place, as expected, on the 3rd across the day, but confirmation as well that they're going to have to be played behind closed doors.
Yeah, that's right. It was sort of quite a difficult one to take, really, for that May 3rd one, not to have fans. Obviously this week we've seen pubs opening up, restaurants opening up, and you kind of think that in a 90,000 capacity stadium, you might be able to get a few thousand fans in there from either side. So, yeah, certainly a shame to see that. You know, the FA say that they've tried their best in trying to accommodate it, and you know, there was a lot of sort of talk about trying to get it as a test sporting sort of fixture, as we'll see over the next month or so in various different leagues and also different sports as well. But it wasn't to be. You know, I guess flip side of that is at least, you know, they have their day out at Wembley, these clubs, you know, for so long. It sort of looked like maybe it would never happen. You know, it might have been easy for the FA just to have written it off completely, but they've, you know, they've stuck at it and they sort of stay true to their word, really. So, you know, they have to have take a bit of credit for that. You know, and then obviously for the second set of finals, there will hopefully be some fans in there. So hopefully that will be a nice occasion for them and perhaps sort of the start of, you know, getting back to a normal season and the beginning of having fans back in grounds. And on those kickoff times, we were certainly pleased within the paper that it's not about a 7:30 kickoff on that Saturday. Otherwise, the deadlines might have been a bit tight. So that was a nice bonus as well.
Yeah. So that all four of the games are going to be on BT Sport. So people, you know, fans can still watch them if they can get access to that service. So the first final, which is May the 3rd, the Bank Holiday Monday, the FA Vars final concert against Heban Town will be a 1 o'clock kickoff. And then the trophy final will be Concord Rangers against Harrogate Town, will be kicking off at 5 o'clock. But then, as you mentioned, the 22nd of May, where hopefully we will be allowed a limited amount of supporters from those clubs, the kickoffs there are slightly different. I think 12:15 for the Vars, finally still to be confirmed, of course, and the trophy 4:15 kickoff between Hereford and Hornchurch. So it'll be interesting to see what the permitted allowance will be on those spectators going forward, but I guess again that's all in the hands of the government and how this roadmap pans out.
Yeah, fingers crossed it goes to plan. You know, certainly this stage is following as planned, isn't it, from the start of this week. So yeah, hopefully it continues in that vein, and like I say, we can get fans back in, and this is sort of the first step back to having normal football back again, really.
Normal football. While we mention normal football, I suppose I should mention the National League as well, because we seem to mention it every week, and it's sort of, it's a bit like the hare and the tortoise tale. We'll gradually get to the bottom of it at one point. But I understand that there were 17, as we discussed really last week, the 17 National League clubs did support that requisition for an EGM, and that was put across by the two clubs that proposed and seconded that to Mark Eyes at the league this week. So I guess as we expected, really, there will be an EGM very soon at the National League to try and bring everybody together, but still no news on that at the present.
No, not at the moment. Like you say, there was always going to be an EGM at some point. I guess probably Cubs feeling that, you know, they really wanted to get this point sort of officially on the agenda and up for discussion and debate, really. I think probably the departure of Brian Barwick last week being announced, you know, caught those clubs probably by surprise, really, in the sense that they didn't sort of expect that to happen. That was all part of getting the EGM on, really. No, but obviously they've called for it. So, yeah, we'll have to just sit tight for the moment, really, and see how things play out.
Much more to get on with. So let's start bringing in our guests. So the big news this week came from the FA and the announcement that the Alliance and League committees had considered the much mooted restructure of steps 4 to 6 and were recommending to FA Council that the structural changes take place this summer in order to achieve the pure pyramid system we've all dreamt about for years. Cue much further debate, rhetorical questions on social media, etc, etc. So only one way to deal with it. Let's ask those in the know. We've heard from them individually in recent weeks on this show, but this seemed an ideal opportunity to bring them together in one show. So it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to Chairman of the Northern Premier League, Mr. Mark Harris.
Hello.
Chairman of the Isthmian League, Mr. Nick Robinson.
Hiya.
And the Vice Chairman of the Southern League, Mr. Anthony Hughes.
Nice to see you, Tim.
It's nice to see you all, and thanks for joining us. I guess first up, I mean, it's novel for me and David Richardson here to see all three of you on screen at the same time, but I'm guessing your monitors have probably got screen burn from the images of each other's faces on there. Then the number of Zooms you must have done in the past year.
Well, let me tell you, to be honest, Tim, I probably see more of these two fellas than I do of my wife. Actually, to be fair, I probably enjoy seeing more of these. No, we won't go there. No, we do see an awful lot of each other, and you're absolutely correct. But these have been very, very difficult times for everybody, from right the way through clubs, leagues, and the fact is that we have to keep talking to each other. These are extraordinary times, and sometimes extraordinary times call for extraordinary solutions.
Yeah, it's kept me going through lockdown, actually, to be fair. It's been very often, it's a welcome distraction. And it's nice to have a structure sometimes in the day to plan things in advance. So it's been challenging, it's been difficult. But, you know, I think in the main, it's not been a difficult experience. It's been a nice experience because normally, as Mark and lesser for Nick, you know, at one meeting at Wembley tends to take up 24 hours of your time. And now suddenly we're over in 2.5 hours. So, you know, it's created opportunities as well as other things, if anything else, you know, that we can work in a different way, which I don't think we would have tried otherwise.
But let me say, I think that what it has done is to cement the Trident Leagues.
Yeah.
I think that is the greatest thing that has come out of, the most positive thing that has come out of the whole lockdown, that we are not only working together, we actually are beginning to, we all see it the same way, that there are no longer, if I go back, you know, and I've been on the FA Council since 2008, you know, it's a long time. And you go back to 2008 and it was nothing like the pleasant atmosphere that we have these days.
I think Nick's absolutely right. We've all got the same challenges, and it doesn't matter whether your club is in Cornwall, in central London, or up in the wilds of the northeast. It doesn't matter. The challenges are all the same. And sometimes people forget, and they'll look back to the good old days and say, oh, I wish we could go back to being the whichever league. But we're in a national league system. That's what we've got. And let's face it, you can never turn the clock back to Colombia in the mid-1950s. And that's really important. So it's quite right that the three of us communicate as regularly as we do. And hopefully that consistency and that continuity is to benefit of all clubs.
I think that the way you... The news came across this week was it was to be applauded because... The statement came out from the FA and it came with a fairly comprehensive further information sheet explaining how things will be done. There's still many, many questions and we'll come to those. But I think that's an important way forward, particularly if everybody's talking to one another and singing from the same hymn sheet. What fans want to know are how it's going to affect them. And sometimes it's very easy to write a press release or write a headline and then it's very difficult then to elicit the further information. So we're lucky we've got you on to answer some of the other questions, but I think it is important that further information was given initially so that people have been able to have that discussion between themselves.
I think that's a very important point. I think it's fair to say, whether it's a fan, and even to a degree, at the risk of being a little bit controversial, if you're a club chairman, most clubs only see things in the contexts of how it affects them. We don't have that luxury. We have to look at a much, much bigger picture. And when you send out information on however well or badly it's issued, unfortunately, some people will only look at the headline. Some people won't actually take the time to actually go and look at what the full ramifications. This is a big thing, this restructure. The bit that obviously that impacts the three of us, the Step 4 side, is just the tip of the iceberg. And I think that sometimes get sauce. I don't know what the other guys think about that, but that's certainly my feeling on it.
I think that again, coming out of lockdown, was a desire for clarity, a demand from our clubs for that transparency, which meant that in the return to football in August and September, the FA were brilliant coming out with guidelines. We were part of that. So, you know, we were involved in lots of these teams-like meetings, but we produced the guidelines after, you know, a lot of man hours went into those, but the clubs knew where they stood. And I think, you know, when we went back on the 19th of September, we were able to say, look, here's what you have to do. You know, six people in a dressing room, things like that. And clubs knew the challenge that they were facing. So that's where it really started. And prior to that, we hadn't really explained ourselves, I think it's fair to say. We made decisions and nobody really knew how those decisions came about. And I think that the development of that, which led to the statements this week, have been very beneficial.
I agree.
I think that's probably quite a lot to do with the way the world's changed as well in the last year. People have had more time to inquire, shall we say. And there's lots of inquiring minds. But I think what's important is that you guys have been made available as well. You know, we've always been able to talk to you and get you on the show, but I think you've been almost unshackled a little bit, because you know, when Nick was on recently, you were talking about all the different anoraks. I had a lot of feedback from people saying, I didn't realise Nick Robinson was on that committee, this committee, that committee. And I think it's important that people understand the hours that you do put in to get to this stage.
Let me tell you, Tim, however much time it takes, it's an absolute privilege, because the three of us are all football fans. Anyone who goes into football, we're fans. We all start behind the goal or whatever it may well be. So it's an absolute privilege. It is a labour of love. If it wasn't, then you wouldn't do it. But I think one of the key things is, as Nick has just said, this has been this pandemic has been a huge learning exercise. Anyone who stands up and says that 12 months ago they could have predicted where we'd be in 12 months' time, I would not believe them. So there's several things. And we all know that the question on many people's lips is, you've come up with this aggregated sporting data solution. How is it you didn't use it 12 months ago? Let's not beat about the bush, because that is the key question many people want answering.
It's the next one on my sheet. So you've done well there, Mr. Harris.
So, I mean, if Ant and Nick are happy for me to go first, then they can tear me to bits, no problem. First point, no one foresaw 12 months ago that we would have a second early termination to the season. No one ever saw that. And throughout all of this, and I think I've said many times, it's one thing to be able to second guess what's going to happen with a pandemic. It's another thing entirely to second guess what government's reaction is going to be to it. So the second point on this is that the aggregated sporting data solution could not have worked 12 months ago. Because for it to work, you have to have league constitutions unchanged for 2 years. Imagine if you had a club coming up from step five, it's won its league by 20 points. Effectively, if you added that their data to the following data, year's data, then you've almost got a free pass up. So you have to have 2 years unchanged constitutions. We've got that now, but we didn't have that 12 months ago. And the third part of the answer to that question is, whatever happens in life, you have to learn from it. And although the decision that was made 12 months ago, made with the full support of all three boards, although that decision was challenged unsuccessfully, you should always learn from things. Could we have done this 12 months ago? Not really, in my view. Should we have done this 12 months ago? Hindsight is a marvellous thing, but you've got to learn. And that's why we believe collectively, because don't believe me, we don't always agree on everything. We have boards that are fully entitled to and quite rightly express their own views. But it's a democracy. And whatever we decide collectively within the committees on which we sit, that applies. I don't know whether, Ant, Nick, you want to come in on that or feel free to share anything
else. I think we look at things now in a totally different way than we, as you said, 12, you go back 12 months, and I go back to that March when we first said, hang on, we're going to have to stop playing. And we were in a situation where never in the all the years I've been involved in any sort of level of football where you would think, right, we're going to stop the season and we're going to do PPG. It was unthinkable at the time. Unthinkable. 12 months on, is it unthinkable? Probably not anymore. But that's what 12 months of this pandemic has done. It's probably led us into a new way of looking at things. And we've made decisions that we never dreamt we would have made. We've made decisions to close clubs down for months on end. We've made decisions to curtail seasons. If somebody had suggested that to us 2 years ago, we'd have thought they were crazy. That there was no chance we'd ever be making those sort of decisions. So, yeah, of course, you learn from what you've done. And it's been totally mind-blowing the last 12 months, really. But, you know, we're still here. We're still going. What I will say is whenever we make a decision, we generally try and make in the best interest for the majority of the clubs that we represent. And in terms of the restructure, I think it'd be fair to say, certainly for myself, what surprised me, and perhaps, I don't know about the other two guys, but it surprised me the appetite for it from Step 5 and from the leagues at Step 5. And, okay, in terms of the extra division of Step 4, that was primarily for the Northern Premier League. But so in a large effect, apart from a couple of clubs laterally moving, it wasn't a huge adjustment for us as a Southern League. And probably for Nick. But who are we to stop, you know, what they desired to happen? You know, why would we say, well, sorry, we know you want it, but we've decided we're not going to do it till next year? And I think that would have been awfully churlish of us.
But I think if we go back to the original point about the decisions, 12 months ago, we were all faced with something that none of us could possibly have foreseen. Indeed, if we'd written a story, you know, and sent it to the non-league paper, to Dave Richardson, said, oh, I've done my piece this week. It's envisaging a worldwide pandemic, and we're going to stop the leagues, and there's going to be no football for 6 months. They chuck it out, you know. Dave Richardson
would have probably have taken it. To be fair, Nick, it'd have been one of the better things in there.
But we had to make decisions in an honest way, because we had nothing to go by. And the point that I think we've been at pains to stress to our colleagues on the Alliance Committee is that we now have something to go back on. We can go back and say 12 months ago, we had this situation. You know, I mean, Mark, I'm sure won't mind me saying that when we first locked down, or when we were approaching lockdown, the Southern League and us, we said, we're not playing this Saturday. I think Northern Premier Fairness, you played some games, and so did the National League. And then nobody played again. I don't believe that will happen again. I believe that as Trident Leagues, we will make a decision together, either to play or not to play. And I think that we've now got that. It's not just the data, but it's the experience. So, you know, in the next 10 years, we'll probably have something else come along that nobody's ever thought of before. But so long as you make decisions genuinely, honestly, so that you can always look people in the eye and say, I meant it honestly. I believe, and that's why I believe that the protest was lost, because we did things in a way which was seen to be honest.
I think there's another point as well. Everyone, when I say everyone's a very generic word, isn't it? There is an assumption on the part of many people that football decisions are driven by precedent. We did it that way last time, but we don't anymore. As all three of us know, and you don't always wind up on the winning side of appeals. That's not the case anymore. Although precedent is relevant, it is no longer that which drives footballing decisions. We are directed by, we're all affiliated leagues. We all have to adhere to the National League system regulations. And I don't know about the other guys, but it winds me up hugely when people say throw the rule book out the window, because in a regulated environment, that's not a luxury we have. But the fact is that precedent is no longer the key driver. You have to now look at each challenge and look at it in the context of those specific circumstances.
Mark, one of the things you've spoken about in previous months is decisions that would have to be made being robust in terms of being able to stand up to any sort of legal challenges or things that might come about with that. Clearly, the FA feels that this decision would be able to stand up to anything that might come around.
Well, I think we now live in a world, to be honest, David, whereby inevitably you wind up looking at the legal aspects, and we'll always defer to Nick on this as our legal man. I think on this particular point, what I would say is this: we do know for a fact that the FA executive consulted with the FA's legal department in bringing the proposals forward. In fact, it was a question that all three of us raised when the original proposals were brought to us. The flip side of that, though, is, as a personal view, this is not the view of the Northern Premier League in any way, shape or form, and none of us are empowered to speak on behalf of the FA. I think it is deeply worrying when you get to a position whereby you are making football decisions based on which solution is less likely to get you sued.
Yeah.
I think that's a very dangerous precedent. We are each put in the positions that we have the privilege of being in by our member clubs and by our boards. So there is accountability there. As Nick has rightly said, you try and make decisions that are honest decisions. Only history ever tells you whether it's right. You know, we've all worked in club environments. And what we always try and do is to combine how this will impact our clubs from the biggest to the smallest, but yeah, also at league level. But the thing we're all told the first day we walk into the FA, rightly, is that one of the things we are there for is the good of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've plugged in many times on this show, but in the past, my old geography teacher used to tell me, if you didn't hand your homework in, it's a, don't tell me what you haven't done, tell me what you're going to do about it. And I think, yeah, for many, many months over last year, non-league was almost tearing itself apart because you know, guys, we didn't know what was ahead and that. And it was mainly higher up in the pyramid that we seem to have the problems. You guys have come together and you've created solutions, and it's, we've got a way forward now, and people can see that. And not everybody's going to agree with it. Hopefully, people have understand the changes that are going to go ahead, and we can touch on those again in a minute. But for me, this is probably the biggest change in football ever. You know, even beyond the Premier League changing, because you've got 110 clubs set for upward movement. That's a massive shift across the game.
Tim, I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you. I think the creation of Step 2 was bigger than this. I really do. I think that was a massive sea change in 2004, which has led to this situation. But that was the starting impetus whereby we all lost a huge number of clubs that created Step 2. And from there, you know, we've gone from three divisions at step three and five at four. We've gone to four divisions at step three and now eight at step four. We've created that pure pyramid. But the start was 2004.
Maybe that's one of those memories I've blanked out, because I think we lost to Lewis in the playoff final to make it a step two as a Yedding side. So
your geography homework is still outstanding. So could you make sure it's in by tomorrow, please?
Why do you think I'm still in contact with my geography teacher? Yeah,
I haven't got over the creation of the Premier League yet. As far as I'm concerned, it's still division 1-4. So apparently you can't back pass anymore. So I'm a bit concerned about that.
Did you know that goals now have crossbars on them? And next,
Jockey.
Not
square anymore, right?
Not wheels, they haven't.
So, I mean, these changes, as I said, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who's sort of involved with non-league. The plans have been in place and discussed for way before the pandemic. But the basics are the additional Step 4 division, which will come under the Northern Premier auspices, and two new Step 5 divisions with tweaks to Step 6 accordingly. Now, it's a big shake-up, but you are trying to create this perfect pyramid, but it's not perfecting the system, because we've still got gaps elsewhere in the pyramid that don't appear to be filled by this new plan.
Well, I think the key thing to pick up there is, and you're absolutely right in what you say, But this is not about filling vacancies. This restructure is about populating the new division. Anthony's league has a vacancy. My league has a vacancy. As soon as you start to fill vacancies over and above just this own division, it creates a whole pile of challenges. And I suspect that if we had looked to do that, we would be sat here this time next year still dealing with the appeals. That's the reality of football life. So this is about filling and occupying the sort of populating, should I say, the new division.
No, surely what it is about is creating the skeleton. We're creating the perfect skeleton. We can populate it later. If there are gaps, if there are vacancies, we can deal with that in due course. But the important thing at the moment is to get that eighth division at step four, the two extra divisions at step five, and get step six sorted. Because I mean, step six had 19 divisions. Okay, it's going to 17. You know, all those things. But hopefully, the end result is going to be better for all the clubs at steps one to six. And particularly those in the lower end, that the geography, and your homework again, that geography is going to be a lot better. That clubs won't be travelling hundreds of miles and have hundreds of miles for their home derby fixture. You know, that's really the driver to it. You know, the driver wasn't wanting a mathematically perfect structure. It was making sure that clubs were not travelling too far. And that's just so important even now with the pandemic.
Yeah, I think clubs' mindset has changed in terms of travel. You go back 25 years and I think travel was just accepted and you've got on with it. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think Nick is right. I think it was about trying to decrease the travelling time. There will be people who will never, ever come round to the way of thinking that clubs can effectively be promoted without it happening on the field of play. You know, I think that there will always be people who think that. That's fair enough. We just made the decision that we feel is in the best interest of the game as a whole. And if it's meant crossing that line, then that's what we've said is the best thing to do this time round.
And I think I think that's absolutely right. Had we not gone ahead with this full restructure this time around, clubs at step seven, there's a huge bottleneck to get into step six. We could not have 2 years of complete stagnation. Now, I know that will not be a message that supporters of some clubs will want to hear. Yeah. But we've also got to understand that as soon as the National League declared step two null and void, and following our curtailment, there was never going to be any relegation. So even if you elected to push and found a way to push clubs up to higher divisions, as leagues, we wouldn't get those clubs back. So, and I'm sure that all of our clubs in our respective three leagues would be extremely unhappy to wind up playing teams short. So this is, as Nick says, this is the next stage on, I don't like the word, but it is the journey. You know, nothing should ever be complete. We've got to continue to react and predict future trends. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the professional game as a result of this and how that filters down to our level of the game. But this is just the next step on the game.
And David, are you got a question there?
I was just going to say, what sort of the impact of in terms of how this all comes about now? What's the difficulties of this process now? Well, if there are any, or is it all sort of fairly simple in terms of how it comes together now?
The process is relatively clear. Is it simple? Well, it's not for me to say. But the process, as those who have read the details will be aware, is this isn't simply a matter of taking the step five divisions, looking to see who's got the best aggregated sporting data results over 2 years and they get promoted. No, it's an application process. The reason for using the sporting data is to give some impartiality to it. Now, the FA are yet to confirm what the set criteria are, but from from an NPL perspective, and I'm sure the same for Nick and Anthony, every club that comes into step four has to be able to have a license.
Yeah.
And that really just picks up on ground grading, security of tenure, and some other good stuff. It'll be for the FA to determine those criteria. They're going to need to do that fairly quickly. FA Council meets on the 22nd to either ratify or not. There could be backlash to it. We can't say it's a done deal yet. Then it will be a matter of those clubs applying. We'll need to ensure that those clubs applying can meet the criteria, whatever those criteria may well be. The first of our three league AGMs is Nick's on the 14th of June. And although someone will shoot me for this somewhere, you have to build in the ability for someone not to like where they're placed. And you have to build in an appeals process. So it's going to need to move pretty quick.
Some clubs may have had quite a difficult sort of 12 months or 18 months on and off the pitch. What's the position on voluntary relegations with clubs who maybe feel that their league that they find themselves in is perhaps a bit of a stretch?
David, let me jump in on that one, because, you know, when 12 months ago, we were all thinking, oh, doom is us. How many clubs are going to go to the wall? You know, how many have gone to the wall at our levels? Not many. You know, those were very sad to see. You know, it really is very sad. And we've had a couple who have asked for voluntary relegation. They've been allowed it, even though, in fairness to the Southern League, they got a vacancy in theirs. They allowed it. And I think that that's just shown us to be a lot different leagues to what we were 20 years ago, where people would have said, absolutely not, you can't have it, you'll have to carry on playing. What we're saying is, no, we listen to clubs now. Yeah. So I do think that the application basis was really important. We're not saying, on this particular thing, we're not saying that the champions get promoted. What we're saying is the champions and the first so many are there to be considered for promotion. The first thing is, do you want to go up? Because you know, prior to pandemic, if you qualified for promotion and turned it down, a la Flackwell Heath all those years ago, you got relegated one step because of the Flackwell Heath situation, where we brought in those things. We brought in sanctions to try and make people take promotion. This is not about forcing people. This is about saying, we want to do this. We want to do it the best way. I genuinely hope that everybody wants to be promoted, whether it's 7-6, 6-5, 5-4. I genuinely hope that everybody wants to be promoted.
I think, Nick, we are sympathetic, Dave, to those requests. We understand the problems and the issues. And I think, to a degree, we have to accept that clubs are being responsible if they look at the situation and say, well, look, we can't survive at this level. So I think we have to be a little bit responsive and receptive to that. The one thing I would hope is that some of the clubs at Step 5 are not assuming that because their points per game puts them top, that they are coming up. On social media, you get the impression that one or two clubs are already celebrating, and that may well be justified. But there is going to be a process to have to go through. And I just hope that they bear that in mind, because there is other criteria apart from the points per game.
Which exactly comes back to what we were saying before. Sometimes people only read the top line, and this is all about the detail. This is, as Anthony rightly says, this is an application process. Yeah. No one's being forced into this. So if a club is fortunate enough to be in a position where it is able to apply, then that is quite right. In the case of the three main feeder leagues of the Northwest Counties, the Northern Counties East and the Northern League, if the top ones do not apply, and it'll be very interesting to see if there are clubs that don't wish to apply, then that will go down to fifth place. In the case of the Step 5 leagues that will push forward one, then they will go down to third place. So this is an application process, and it's not mandatory. But as Nick rightly says, in theory, you come into football to progress. Now, every league has clubs that are quite happy to stay where they are. And having chaired a club, there's one surefire way not to win promotion. It's called cut the wage bill in January. And it normally works.
And with my own club hat on, we all know that clubs can be as ambitious as they want to be, and sometimes you get over ambitious chairmen and boards that need, you know, a bit of reality there. But Nick's already touched upon it there. We are in a position where we've got a lot more clubs with us than we feared we may have 12 months ago. And a lot of that has been due to the funding that's been available and has come down and guidance and help and assistance. Is there going to be additional assistance for these clubs that are making that step up to that next step, which may be quicker than they had intended? Is there going to be a support network, even if that's between clubs, giving support to these clubs coming through, just so that we can make sure that they are up to the standard and can compete at that level?
Well, I think the first point to make there is this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, because this was first, as we all know, announced 2 years ago, and it should have happened 12 months ago, or for the season that's just been curtailed. So this shouldn't be coming as a surprise to too many people. That's the first point. The second point is in and around the finance. I'm sure all of us will cite examples where the FA don't always get things right. But I tell you what, I think they've done a fantastic job in securing the level of funding that our clubs have enjoyed.
Yeah,
agreed. And in a number of cases, whilst no one, this is not in any way to understate the human tragedy of COVID-19, but there are a number of football clubs that are going to come out of this crisis in not a bad financial state, largely because of the grant funding that's been, and credit where credit is due. For me, it's about how they go forward from there. For those, to answer the question directly, clubs coming from step five, the situation from a Northern Premier League perspective is no different to what it is any year. Every year that clubs join our league, we sit them down, virtually this year, obviously, and we explain to them what they can expect from us and what we expect from them in return. We outline the resources that are available to them, because when you come from step five to step four, it is a massive, massive change. The compliance culture increases. And we have exciting conversations in and around wearing ties in boardrooms and other contentious things of that nature. But you're moving to an environment where there are mandated sponsors, where you're moving to a position, though, where there is more support and advice. And that will be available to step five clubs coming into our league. And I'm sure it's the same with the Isthmian and the Southern Leagues.
Yeah,
will that be ramped up for next year? No, because it's the system is in place, but we will continue to give as much advice and direction as clubs need joining us.
You can't understate the amount of work that's gone in to secure the funding through this pandemic. It's all three of us have been to so many meetings when we've hoped for funding. We thought it might happen. It might not happen. It might be loans. It might be grants. And there's a small little team of people who've been working like beavers with the DCMS and the government to make sure that our level of football wasn't forgotten.
But we do have to acknowledge that the government made the money available. In fairness, back in October, when money was made available to enable the National League to start, what happened, unfortunately, was that it got lost in a sea of, oh, we don't agree how it's being dished out. And the message came back with, nobody said thank you. From my point of view, thank you, government. Thank you for making the money available to our levels of the game that you have. As Anthony said, we've had a lot of people at the FA, those that we deal with on a very regular basis, who have formed the held out the begging bowl, if you will. But if government had turned around and said, no, there's no money, that would have been the end of it.
I think the other side of that is
many millions available for sport, and we're going to allocate it amongst the various sports.
I think it's very easy for everyone in football to assume that because we're football, we should be at the front of the queue for taxpayers' money. And let's face it, there are many, many sectors. My day job's in the travel sector, and my goodness, that sector needs government. Everyone has their hand out. And sometimes there is a perception that you simply knock on the door of number 11 Downing Street, go, right, Rishi, this is what we need. And Rishi then goes, fine, have some money. And we all know that real life isn't like that. All that we have tried to do, and of course, would we have liked to have seen more funding? Everyone would like to see more funding, but no one can deny that I think those who have secured the funding, as Anthony has said, deserve a massive, massive vote of thanks. Because in a lot of this, everyone says the Premier League should bail out the rest of football. All our clubs have had the benefit from the Premier League going back to September, October time. And that's been almost forgotten. And that's wrong, because the Premier League, to be fair to them, have supported our clubs financially. Of course, in a pandemic, memories become a little shorter and priorities are always close to home, but it needs to be recognised.
Yeah, for sure.
Going back to restructure then, in between the clubs involved, the allocation of the divisions and leagues, you've got an application process, and then your things are going to be allocated. I've got in my mind, it's some sort of like great board game of Risk or something. You've got different cups around a big map of Great Britain, and you're trying to allocate.
Geography, you won't understand. Yeah, yeah. You don't do your homework.
He didn't put his homework in, did he?
I'm sure I've sent you my certificate in the past, Mr. Robinson.
No, your dog ate it last time.
But this is going to be the thing that's going to get people hot under the collar on social media is the allocation across leagues. But I think clubs need to understand that to get this right, there is going to have to be probably some lateral movement and some movement both this year and seasons going forward.
Without question.
I can guarantee it. If you just look at the facts in my league, you know, there are no changes. So in our Southeast division, I've got at least one club coming up from the Scaffold League. At least one. And there may be one from the Southern Combination that would fit into our Southeast division. So either one or two clubs have got to move sideways to move into South Central. And if
what's really important?
South Central, and let's say another one comes in from the combined counties, there's three that are going to move around. So, you know, there have to be changes. But that is, for me, that's a positive. It's a refresh. What it means is that the Southeast Division is going to get one, if not two, new clubs. And they will look at that. I think supporters want it. That's why we have promotion and relegation, isn't it? So that people see new clubs. It's not always the same old, oh, hello, Harry. Saw you last year. How are you? You know, it's, hello, nice to meet you, a new friend.
And I think the other thing is that the process for allocating clubs this time around is exactly the same as it's been in allocating clubs in the previous. I mean, contrary to popular opinion, the three of us don't sit in a room, go, right, who can we really screw up this week? This is about what we do with all this is once you know who your clubs are, we then look not just at the geography, but you look at the travelling times. And what we try and do, and driven by and with the full support of the FA executive, you look at not just the actual mileage between clubs, but you do look at your motorway system, and you look at your number of midweek games, and you try wherever possible to come up with the best solution. But as Nick absolutely correctly says, there's only one thing that's certain: not everybody's going to be happy.
No,
I was going to say we can guarantee that we will not please all the people all the time.
And listen, you've got to have some sympathy with some clubs. There are some clubs geographically just happen to be in that situation where they are on the border of one league or another. And it's happened on many occasions where clubs end up to-ing and fro-ing. You know, there are clubs that will be in the Northern Premier League and then in the Southern League and back to the Northern Premier League. And there is an inevitability about that, you know. But I think that's part of how us three working together can make the system more similar so that we come into alignment far more, so that if you are placed into a different division, you know, you are dealing with the same set of rules, structures, and the way roughly the leagues are operated.
Yeah, lateral movement is a fact of non-league life. Yeah. And I think and rightly so. So what we, as Anthony rightly says there, we just need to try and provide as consistent a journey and a smooth transition as possible. But it is tough. It does throw up challenges. I can think of a club in the Northern Premier League that sits right on the eastern side of a major urban conurbation, and they are in one specific league right now. It would be unfair to mention them, but they will know who they are. If we were to move them as they would like to the other side of that divide, to put them closer to the rest of that urban conurbation, it substantially increases the average mileage for all the other teams. So you wind up having to make decisions that are in the interest of the majority. You try and accommodate absolutely everybody. I don't know what these maps are going to look like. I really don't. We may need to look at lots of different boundary options to come up with the right one. When we know who the clubs are, then we'll allocate them. But
I think the one thing we know in step four is that the extra division going to the Northern Premier will probably mean that the line for the Northern Premier will come further south. So, you know, I think we have to be prepared for those eventualities. And as Mark said, we just try and get it as best we can so the clubs have the best of both worlds in terms of having local derbies and as little travelling as possible. That's what we try and do.
But look, the greatest thing is that, you know, I'm sure you're right that the influence of the Northern Prem or the administration line of the Northern Prem will come further south.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing we've achieved is that the three of us are more, it's not so different.
No,
it doesn't really matter whether League X is run by the Northern Prem, the Southern League, or ourselves, because we have the same sponsor. We've got the same money coming in. Okay, we may use it in slightly different ways, but we are doing all those things. We've got standardised rules. We haven't got a situation where, if Mark Harris gets up grumpy one morning, somebody's going to be deducted 3 points when they wouldn't because I'm a nice guy. You know, it's that sort of thing. We've got it regularised. And therefore, whilst somebody may say, I mean, there was a club that I spoke to Mark about and said, do you realise you could have that club? And that club itself would look at it and say, how can I be a Northern Premier South? But actually, it doesn't matter. It's only a matter of who is administering your league. What it's about is who are you playing around you? What's the situation? Have you got a local derby? Have you got Christmas and Easter? Have you got all those things? And is it in the best interest of all the clubs at that step?
It's a really interesting trend, that, because if you sort of look to the long term and the trend towards more localised fixtures, which is a little bit of going back towards the 50s and 60s, but there's still a balance to be drawn, isn't there? Scotland showed that fans aren't terribly keen on playing the same people 4, 6, 8 times a season. So you have to strike the balance between maximising your local opportunities and familiarity not breeding contempt.
I guess another question that's maybe a bit further down the line once all this has been considered, but how's this going to affect the FA Cup competitions? We've already got a few anomalies in the FA Cup entries across the steps, and clubs lower down increasingly frustrated that their applications end up being turned down because of the number of clubs that are there, and the FA Trophy and the FA Vars.
I'll let Nick take that.
Yeah,
Nick.
Yeah, thanks. I think that the FA Challenge Cup has had a problem that it's been trying to face for a couple of seasons. We've been consulted on this. The more clubs you have in, the more preliminary rounds you have to have, or an extra preliminary round, or an extra preliminary round. And, you know, you're starting in June to get those matches played. It is the premier competition throughout the world, and we've got to remember that and to take part in it should be a privilege, and not just anybody that can find a pitch to play on. So I think that what we're trying to do is to say that it's on merit, it's on where you are within the National League system that sets which competition you're going to play in. And therefore, there are some changes coming up in the FA Cup. I mean, one of the good things that from our point of view, and I can only say from our point of view as our leagues, that because we've gone ahead with this, the FA Challenge Cup has been able to say, right, we can now do that number of clubs. And they were able to tell us that we won't have clubs at step three in the extra preliminary round.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is really good because in the past, and we've had our step four clubs brought in. So up to this season, we had to have a break for the first Saturday. We could have step three clubs on the first Saturday. Step four had to join in the next week because of the FA Cup. And then you had the argument, well, when should we start league fixtures? Because clubs really want to have a league match before they go into the FA Cup because there's so much money to be won. So, you know, there are so many matters that you have to take into account that I'm sure that the average person doesn't actually take into account. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Well, we do. We think about that all the time. What we've got this year is we can, on the 14th of August, all start. We haven't got somebody, no, I've got an FA Cup match. We're starting league matches on that day. It's a great thing.
There's a big smile gone across David Richardson's face there because he's trying to plan out the paper and when fixtures are going to play.
Yeah, the other thing that's very relevant is the TV contractual obligations that says the first round has to be on such and such a date and the third round proper has to be on such and such a date. So, you know, whatever happens before then, the number of clubs that apply has to happen so that it falls into time with the first round proper of the competition being in November or whatever it is.
Just looking ahead to next season, hopefully we won't be in another situation that we've experienced this season or even the one previously. What is the position on in terms of being flexible and putting in contingency plans and things like that? I know it's been spoken about fixture mirroring in terms of schedules. What's your thinking just in case, you know, we do have another problem season with coronavirus?
I think, though, the difficulty is, as I said previously, it's not so much trying to predict whether there will be a third wave, a variant, because none of us know what the long-term efficacy of the vaccine program is going to be. The challenge is actually in trying to second-guess what government does. And whilst I'm not entirely sure that government knows what government's going to do, that's an entirely separate matter. All that we can do as leagues is balance flexibility against additional wage cost.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, that's what it all boils down to. So, yes, you can be playing any number of weeks, but the reality is if you have contracted players, then unless you physically agree with the player and write it into the contract to mitigate that when you're not playing, that's a big problem. So what are we physically doing? Well, you've already heard that we're all starting on the same day. What we have said is that we will potentially go to the end of April if we need to. All three leagues have signed up to the idea of the alternate competition, should we be required to do so. But as we saw this year, the feasibility of that depends entirely on if we have a serious amount of disruption as a result of either a third wave or a variant, when does it happen? Because at the end of the day, although for the virtually professional National League to be able to carry on into June is one thing, for clubs at our level, some of whom share with cricket and people do want to go on holiday and things of that nature, but most crucially, you can't carry on to an indeterminate period because our clubs, as the chaps have just highlighted there, they have to be in the early rounds of the FA Cup. So it's not quite as straightforward as some people might think that you simply delay everything. So there's some flexibility in terms of extra weeks built into the programme. Can't speak for Nick and Anthony in terms of League Cups, but it's highly unlikely we will run a League Cup in the Northern Premier League. unless clubs tell us that that's something they desperately want to do, but I think it would cause a problem. There's steps already being taken to reduce FA Cup replays. That will help as well. And of course, the one thing none of us can control is the weather. And as we all know, it gets a bit soggy in this part of the world from time to time. So there's a limit, David, to what you can physically do. I don't know what the other chats would add to that.
Well, I think that the one thing we have asked the Alliance Committee, the three of us have asked the Alliance Committee to ensure that we have a ruling before we kick a ball on the 14th of August, that we know what will happen if there is a further interruption next season. Mark has alluded to the alternative competition. What we haven't decided is what the criteria will be that will trigger that alternative competition. We wanted an alternative put in the rules this season before we kicked off on the 19th of September. It wasn't permitted. We were a little bit miffed about that, but okay, we accepted it. And as it happens, because of the way this season's gone, it wouldn't have mattered. It would never have triggered. Right. So I think that what we want from our club's point of view, and this comes back to what I was saying earlier about we've got 12 months experience now. Mm. We've now got to, we are saying to the Alliance Committee, look, we need this. Our clubs need to see that we have learned from what we've done in the past. We've got to have this in there.
And the difficulty is, of course, as always, one man's certainty is another man's lack of flexibility. And you have to strike the balance somewhere in between, given as, and again, it's not for me to comment on the National League situation, but I do have a great deal of sympathy for any football competition where you're not in control of the entirely in control of your destiny.
I think, you know, looking from the outside and also being on the inside, I suppose, with the club hat, and there'll be lots of people that'll be upset by all the everything that's being proposed and things like that. But it is an assertive move, and we need to move forward. We need to get things done and get things sorted. And non-league has always been about leading the way in that vein. One important thing, I think, from my understanding of the whole situation is that you've spoken about so many things that need to get done, and you've also mentioned the timescales that you're looking to get that done under. Is it possible? Is it a realistic timescale so that we're, what would be the because I think you mentioned the was it a date when council will meet, which is before non-league finals day. So all this would be done before the end of the non-league season.
No. We've got the proposals going to an extraordinary meeting of council next week. Where there's a will, there's a way. We are determined to get this through. Yeah. And I think where that is the case, we will succeed. We have to be positive. We absolutely have to be. It's like, the team manager who goes into the game and says, well, let's see how many goals. Let's keep it down, good boys. We're going to lose today. But nobody goes in saying that. Everybody goes to Anfield thinking they can win. They didn't used to. But everybody, even when Liverpool were winning every game, I bet you everybody went there saying, we can do it. We can be the club to beat them. Mm. And we've got to be that same way. We will achieve it. We have to achieve it.
Yeah, we do. We have to put contingencies in. It would be dereliction of duty if we didn't attempt to do it. And there's only so much we can do, but whatever we can do, we'll put in place just in case we have to mitigate any disruption next season.
Yeah, we know where the roadblocks are going to be. We know where there's, and you build that into your decision making process.
The M62, isn't it?
Sorry?
The roadblock is on the M62.
That's the one. East to west, but only when it snows, which is June. But in reality, as we said earlier on, this is not new. This is a process that's taken a heck of a long time. So a lot of the thinking has already been done in this respect. We now need to crack on. Clubs need the certainty of where they're going to be. Not many good things have come out of this pandemic. And again, I would not in any way wish to underestimate or be in any way disrespectful to all of those that have lost their lives and the families that have been affected. But this has given us an opportunity to do some good for a lot of football clubs. And that's the overriding factor here.
Well, it's good to have you on and get your thoughts. I suppose it would be amiss of me not to ask you why you're here. We now know there's going to be a vacancy as chairman of the National League. I'm guessing, first off, you're not going to be chucking your hats into the ring. But any advice for someone that may be considering the same about leading a league in troubled times?
Mark said earlier about being a huge honour being on the FA Council. I think it's a huge honour leading my league. And I would say to anybody who's thinking standing for that, it is a huge honour. You represent, yeah. I represent 82 clubs and I never forget that. I'm re-elected every year and I'm very happy that I am. I make decisions honestly. I do everything I can in the best interest of my clubs. If I get it wrong, I'll always say sorry. So anybody wanting to go to the National League, remember it's an honour.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's entirely correct. I think accountability is the key thing. No chairman can be autonomous. We're all accountable. We're accountable to our boards and we're accountable to our clubs. I think that whoever succeeds Brian as chairman of the National League has got a fantastic opportunity, but a tough job. But it's not just about the National League. I think as a result of the pandemic in sport, there is, for all of us, a little bit of a, not rebuilding exercise, but we need to restore that camaraderie. The one thing that sets non-league football aside from professional game is the fact that we're all in this thing together. And that might have got a little bit lost in the last 12 months. And it is unseemly to be bickering over whether it be finance or this and that. At the end of the day, any club that is dissatisfied with the way in which its league is run has the opportunity to stand for that league's board. You have that opportunity. All I would do is wish whoever comes into that particular position, which is, let's face it, the top job in non-league football, and they are the senior competition in non-league football. They will have our support as the current incumbent and his predecessors have, and we wish him all the best.
Yeah, it's a unique position, isn't it? Because you're looking upwards and you're also looking backwards, and it's trying to keep your eye on both levels of the game. And as Mark said, and Nick, we will look to support them as best we can. And whoever takes that job on, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of candidates, that, it's somebody that has good knowledge of both the professional game, but also the National League system as well.
Yeah, well, gentlemen, it is a privilege to get all three of you on together. Once a year we may bump into people all in one unit, AGMs or similar things like that. But I think it was important that we got your take on the messages that were going out there and clarify the way forward, the process and that, and the fact that things have been moving behind the scenes to get to this stage, and that the wheels are continuing to move very, very, very fast. So, once again, a pleasure to have you on the Non-League Football Show. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Nick.
Our pleasure.
And three of us replace one Dave Anderson.
So it is the FA VAR's fourth round this weekend, and the competition begins to gather pace with a full weekend of matches. As we heard from Guildford City's Paul Barnes last week, it's strange times for clubs, for those who have games, and these are their only competitive matches. Our next guest knows only too well the frustrations of this and last season, but I sense he's a glass half full rather than a half empty man, and I'm sure we'll find that out. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show Director of Coaching at Anthony Nomads, Conrad Logan.
Hi, guys.
Good to have you on, Conrad. I mentioned the lack of competitive football to prepare for this game. You are, of course, members of the United Counties League, and they're running a supplementary cup competition, but you're not competing in that.
Yeah, we've decided just to, obviously with the season being curtailed, to play a couple of friendlies and then just go straight into the VARs.
Yeah, and but behind the closed doors, still an issue even for those competitions, and one that you're going to face this weekend with clubs, playing at every level. That they've got costs coming in, and you're missing out on that extra ignition that that fans can give you. How disappointing is it to be playing a big game like this FA Vars fourth round in front of, well, just your own team?
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. It's probably one of the biggest games that this club's been involved in. So, you know, we've had a good turnout. But it is what it is. The situation with the pandemic, you know, it's people are losing lives in the pandemic. So when we put it into perspective, it's not the be all and end all. But for a small club, I mean, obviously our local team is Leicester City. If people can't go to that, if we would have been allowed a certain number in here, then a lot of their fans would have been loved to come out and watch local football and support us. So, yes, we have, you know, we'll take a financial hit compared to if we got this far on a sort of normal season as such.
Yeah, we'll come back to the FA Vars in a moment, but you mentioned Leicester City there, and obviously you were had a successful career as a goalkeeper, both with them. You won the Scottish FA Cup with Burnley, and you know, other numerous clubs as well. I'd imagine you've had many offers from many clubs much higher than the Step 5 of the United Counties League, yet you've committed to this new role of director of coaching at Anstey Nomads. What was the big sell for you?
Well, to be honest, for the last couple of seasons, even though I was playing, I was still involved here. So it's a local club to myself. I know the manager, I know the chairman, I know a lot of the people here. I set up my own goalkeeping academy and, you know, I spoke to the club, what do they do to facilitate their goalkeepers. So as part of that, they sent all their grassroots goalkeepers to myself in the academy. So I've had the link, I've seen how it's been run. Obviously, last year, sort of my last game was on loan at Forest Green, obviously in League 2. So yes, there is a golfing class between League 2 and Step 5, but I just felt with the way this club, the projects that they've gone on behind the scenes, you know, with hopefully training centres and new clubhouses and building the club, it was something, you know, that I thought in my stage in my career that, you know, I wanted to sort of get my teeth into, and you know, it ticked all the boxes.
Yeah, among your other past clubs as a player, you won the League Two playoffs with Stockport County, and we've obviously seen them drop out of the league and struggle, and now on the way back up, and they certainly look like they're in a strong position to challenge again. Does it give you inspiration for this project, having seen now other clubs that you know well have been able to make those steps up and get all the ducks in the row in the right line and move forward?
Yeah, I mean, from a football point of view, you know, if you've got a good team and you get a promotion or two, you've got that momentum, which, you know, bounces you on up the leagues. And we see it, you know, you've used Stockport as an example. Luton were down there. You know, there's lots and lots of clubs, even lower than them, that, you know, get one promotion, then another, and then another. But from the club's point of view, and I suppose from myself, I see how the ambition of the club isn't just a short-term fix to get a promotion this year. You know, we've got plans for a new clubhouse with you know, probably state-of-the-art function rooms to make the club self-sufficient. That's what we want. We want to run it as a business, not reliant on, you know, as such people through the gate and that sort of side. We want to be self-sufficient, run ourselves. And because we see, you know, you can't just buy success. You've seen it yourself. Clubs have gone bust and, you know, people come in and they think, you know, a chairman's got a few quid and he'll bankroll it for a season or two and let's see where we can get to. And if they don't get there, then all of a sudden they're in the scrap heap and they're struggling. So, you know, from the chairman, the manager here, you know, the funds that we've got for first team players, for bits and bobs, they're all run for ourselves. So if we have people through the, you know, the gate and through the bar, that pays the players. It's not coming through anyone else. So I like the moral side of that. I like the way that they've put their business plans together. And hopefully, you know, then we will see the success on the pitch from that.
Yeah, I've seen the document. I think it was a vision of the future statement from the club, but with some, plenty of positive but realistic words as well, I think, from the chairman, Carl Watson. And we often talk about the importance of the team on and off the field for clubs to be successful. And you've also got Adam Etheridge there, who's well known to the non-league show for his knowledge of non-league and administration. I sense from sort of doing my own little research around there, you get a buzz around a winning dressing room. Is there a similar sort of buzz coming across the club with this sort of vision coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, as we've obviously published the vision and, you know, the steps that we're taking towards to doing that is obviously the pandemic, we haven't, you know, with growing the teams, even with myself, you know, I've come in and growing from mini dribblers up to now adding a senior ladies team, which we didn't have. We've got a pathway from mini dribblers to first team men. We've got a pathway from mini dribblers to first team ladies. So, you know, with 30 odd teams, we're ticking the boxes. We're pushing the club in the right direction. And it's just, you know, it's the frustrating thing is, you know, we want to do more fundraisers. We want to get all the 300 odd kids involved in doing more stuff. And we've got some brilliant plans. But it's just, it's been steady at the moment, obviously, with the current situation.
Yeah, a very thriving youth setup there, which I think is always, it's essential now to a modern day club to drive forward. We're all about brands and things like that. And are you still planning on playing again this season as well and sort of building a team around you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was sort of one of the things, when I sort of come here, I will still play. So I'm not retiring as such. And that I've, to be honest with you, I've got the best of both worlds. I still get the buzz. I'm in the changing room with the lads. I'm one of the boys when I'm in there. The manager's a manager, despite me spending the other 5 or 6 days with him, trying to plan for, you know, buildings, funding, bits and bobs. When it comes to match day, he's a manager and I'm one of the boys and I'm in there and I'm having the laugh and the crack and I'm training with the boys. So I tick all the boxes that way. And also trying to sort of educate myself as a coach and as a, you know, as a director of coaching as such. And you know, trying to push my career forward that way as well.
Yeah, and obviously the club's got plans to move forward and move up the leagues. We've spoken elsewhere on this week's show about restructuring plans at Step 5 and Step 6. I think based on the formula that I've seen so far, based on last season, you could be in line for promotion. But across the two seasons, which is how they look to be calculated, it looks like you're going to miss out. Life can be hard sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, obviously, for myself, I was only sort of here full-time as of last year. And we had a great season. We only played 12 games because we've had such a good run in, obviously, the Vaz. We won 11 and drawn 1. So, you know, we couldn't have done much better. Obviously, what's come out in the last week or so with the restructuring, we don't agree with. And that's not sour grapes. You know, it looks like in our level, at our league, Shepshed will go. They obviously were top last year when the pandemic struck and second or third this year. So over the points per game, they deserve to go up. But, you know, from our point of view, we just can't see how the FA can pull up a null and void season and use that information, because legally and morally, you would think that null and void is non-binary, didn't exist. I mean, this season, they've curtailed the season, so they've used their wording slightly better. So they probably knew last year that they didn't quite word it properly by null and voiding it. So, you know, from us, we're frustrated with that. What we can do about it, I'm not sure. But it's not a case of us saying, oh, we've had a great season. We played 12 games. We were top. We should be there. We don't see possibly why the rush is. Play another season and then restructure. You know, hopefully the pandemic has passed and we can have a full season next year and people will go on merit. So, yeah, just a little bit, you know, curious to how they've come to that decision is probably the best word. So, yeah, we will wait and see.
Yeah, it leaves a little bit of sour taste in your mouth, I'd imagine. Talking of which, I also saw news of Zain Hakim, who was the first player at your club to gain international call-up with Antigua and Barbuda. I think you played against Montserrat recently and then went along with the other England-based players and he was refused entry to the next game at the US Virgin Islands for the next game. We talk about chapters for autobiographies, but that's a tale he's going to be telling for many years to come, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what went on, but yeah, for him, it's you know, fantastic. He's been recognised, he's gone and played for his country. I've known Zane from my Mansfield days. He was obviously a player up there, so I played with him. And he was in and around and played a few games for the first team. So a good lad who's had a good season for us. So, you know, it was nice for him to get his call up. And he probably got back playing football a little bit earlier than we have, you know, already. So he's had a few games under his belt. And, you know, it's it's credit to him.
Yeah. So this FA Vars game then, Wellingborough Town, your visitors, it's the strangest of seasons. I mean, what have you guys been able to prepare about your opposition?
Well, we did. We've played against them once this season, away from home. We beat them 1-0 on the day. And they were a good team at that time. You know, we were both sort of, I think, first and second, or second and third in the league. So we both had good starts, probably 6-7 games in when we played. But listen, it's a cup game. It is what it is. It's, you know, if you get your own house in order and you play well, then, you know, it's not like, you know, the FA Vars is what it is. Step 5, step 6, you're not going to come against step 2 teams. So, you know, the gulf in class between everyone shouldn't be too big. So, you know, we've had a decent preparation. We've had, you know, training. We've had a training game and a friendly. So, you know, hopefully we're ready to hit the ground running on Saturday.
And just to another little widget into the to the equation is the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh taking place Saturday afternoon as well. So moving of kickoff times, you've played up and down the pyramid. So a 3 o'clock kickoff is probably fairly rare for you nowadays. But certainly at your level now, a 12:45 kickoff. How does that change preparations?
Listen, it is what it is. There's not a lot we can do about it. We actually played a friendly the other day at 1 o'clock, so we won't be using that as an excuse. Let me tell you, if it doesn't go to plan on Saturday, we won't be blaming the kickoff time. So, listen, you've got to adapt. You just bring things forward a couple of hours. Look, it is what it is. Our hands are tied. We needed to change it, obviously, with the circumstances. So. But yeah, well, it won't be an excuse on Saturday.
Well, with various things opening up now, it certainly doesn't give any players any excuse to have a late Friday night. They need to be up early doors and ready for a Saturday morning. In terms of the FA Vars, obviously you've got experience of Wembley. Do you sow those sort of seeds in the minds of the players alongside you?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously something that was mentioned right from the start. You know, it's if you get a decent run, you know, you're not far away. We're, is it 4 games away from being there? So it has been mentioned a lot. And, you know, it's, I think you've got to, sounds a bit cliche, but you've got to take one game at a time. I think, you know, I've been fortunate enough in my career to have been there and have won there and played at big stadiums in front of a lot of people, whereas a lot of the lads here are local lads and haven't had that. So until it probably gets closer to quarter semi-finals, I think, you know, let's just take baby steps, have it as a vision, have it as a carrot if you want. But, you know, listen, you got to do your job Saturday, and, you know, the draw away from home the week after as well. If we get through, it's going to be tough. It's not easy, but, you know, it's a fantastic incentive, isn't it?
It is, and we often see when we feature clubs from the FA Vars on the show, we often see then in a few years' time they're moving up the pyramid. They are the clubs that are making those adjustments, and with your vision statement, how far do you think the club can go up the pyramid?
Listen, again, I don't want to sound boring, but we're taking every step as it comes. It's you know, we think that we've, you know, obviously with the results of this season, we've done well. We've gone quite a distance so far in the Vars. We were top of the league when it was curtailed, thinking that, you know, if we keep that momentum, we'll get promoted. But it's like anything then, you know, it's that momentum that I mentioned earlier. If you go up, people take note. Anstey Nomads, probably last year, 2-3 years ago, not many people have heard of them. All of a sudden, if you get into step 4, you become the Stamfords and people like that, where, you know, you become renowned sort of nationally. So, and that attracts players, and the better players that you can attract, obviously, the further you can go. So, you know, we're realistic about it. We would like to be, if we compare ourselves to sort of Colville and Barwell locally, probably 2 steps ahead of us at the moment. So, you know, if we could get up to in and around that, and be sort of the highest or on par with the highest, you know, non-league clubs around Leicestershire, then, you know, that's what we've got to strive towards. But we're not, you know, saying we're going to get in the league in 5 years, because that's, you know, it's just not realistic. And as I mentioned before, people plow money into it unrealistically. It doesn't happen, and it affects the club. So we want to leave a legacy at this club where, you know, it was, you know, self-funded, self-contained with good plans moving forward.
All the messages we'd love to hear on the Non-League Football Show, because we've seen far too many clubs do it the wrong way round. Conrad, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck at the weekend, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
That's it then for this week. Thank you to all of our guests and for everybody for listening, wherever you may be. Thanks especially to David Richardson for holding my hand. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, so a lot in there this week. It's really jam-packed because of all those VARs games we're covering. Obviously, we'll have reaction to the news at steps 4-6 of the restructuring. I've spoken to Hashtag United, who are in line for one of the promotion spots, as are Plymouth Parkway and their manager Lee Hobbs, who's done a great job since he's been in there. I've also caught up with a few league chairmen as well, Alan Poulain at United Counties League, Alan Constable at Combined Counties. Both of those leagues who are in line to run the new Step 5 divisions, and also Paul Lawler at North West Counties League, who will, should the proposal go through, will be saying goodbye to their sort of top three teams in their division. But, you know, he's really been one who's campaigned really for the restructures to go ahead, and it's sort of really had his sort of finger on the pulse in terms of this restructure. So he was certainly pleased that it seems like it's going to happen. Lots in there as usual as well. I spoke to Walton and Hersham, who are still in the VARs, but a nice story there of the seven teenagers who took over the club a couple of years ago and, certainly trying to take it in a different direction. They're believed to be the youngest owners in world football. So, some story there, and really, really interesting to catch up with them. And there's lots of other bits and pieces in there as usual on Sunday.
So it might not be lots of football to watch on Saturday, certainly not if you follow your local club, but there's plenty of reasons to get up on a Sunday morning to buy your non-league paper. Thanks for that, David. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media. I'm there at Tim Fuel. We're there as a show at Non-League Show. And you can follow at Non-League Paper there too. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay alert, stay safe, thank you, and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.